Upfront, inside the entertainment industry, is brought to you by member-supported Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
Coming up on this week's edition of Upfront, I caught up with Emmy-winning actress Uzo Aduba about her role in the Emmy-winning HBO series End Treatment. I'll also be talking to tow truck owner Early Walker about starring in A&E's new non-scripted series, Hustle and Tow. And finally, journalist, film critic, and author Rhonda Rasha Penrice is back for our entertainment roundup, where we'll discuss NBC and the Golden Globe Awards and her new book, Black American History for Dummies. We'll also be playing throwback sounds from pop music legend and dance icon Janet Jackson, who celebrates a birthday on Sunday. But first, a message from the High Museum of Art.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the High Museum of Art, presenting Friday Jazz on May 21st with music curated by jazz artist and bassist Kyrie Cabral Simmons. Guests can enjoy a night of live music throughout the museum's campus and explore exhibitions Our Good Earth and Underexposed. Friday Jazz is from 6 to 9 p.m. Advance time tickets are available at high.org.
Wake up. This is Spike Lee listening to my man, Ray Cornelius, up front, 91.9 WCLK.
Rich is one of my greatest drivers that I have on the team.
Rich is awesome when it comes to dealing with tough toes and tough customers.
We're going to try to snatch block it from the side, bring it closer this way. But we got an angry crowd out here, so we kind of got to hurry up.
The best part of the job, it keeps your brain moving constantly. But with angry customers, some of these people will run you ragged.
You just heard a snippet from the new A&E non-scripted series, Hustle and Tow. The show offers viewers a rugged day-in-the-life perspective on tow truck drivers, their families, and more. I caught up with Hustle and Tow star Early Walker of Chicago's W&W Towing to chat about his career and appearing on the show.
So it was kind of, in a sense, by accident. I walked off my job. I used to work for the Board of Education. And so I walked off my job because I wanted to basically start my own business. I've come from an entrepreneurship background. And so I wanted to start my own business. I didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do. So I said, okay, well, I'll start a car lot. So I started a little small car lot. And so when I started that car lot, I got tired of paying the tow truck drivers to tow the cars to my lot. So I said, okay, you know what? If I find me a little small, cheap tow truck, I'm going to buy me a truck. And so I went out and I looked, and I had no idea that trucks were as expensive as they were. And so I ended up getting what I thought was a deal at the time, a truck for $7,500. And so literally I bought this truck and it was raggedy. I mean, it was the Fred Sanford and Son truck of tow trucks. I mean, no AC, holes in the floors. I mean, like it was bad, you know? And so I got the truck and I kind of like gained a passion for it. I mean, I was self-taught, so I kind of learned as I went along. I damaged a lot of people's cars along the way, but I kind of got the hang of it. And so I went kind of marketing myself, and before I knew it, I mean, it turned into a real business, you know, so.
Wow. And let's talk about how your company was featured as part of one of the episodes for Hustle and Tow, which really basically follows the lives of these tow truck drivers, the things that you guys experience, how the companies are formed and how you guys operate. How did you get involved with this particular series?
So again, it was kind of what I thought was a joke. I had a email from the network saying, hey, we think that your company would be good for a new show that we've got coming out. Reach out to us. So I thought it was a joke, so I ignored it. And so then I got another email about a day or so later, and they were like, hey, here's the phone number. We need you to give us a call. We think that you guys would be great for the show. So I called them. They did a little small interview with me and my staff, and literally less than a week, you know, they were out, you know, and they, you know, were shooting and filming. And so, I'm excited. I mean, the first episode that we were displayed in was, they titled it Already Damaged. And so oftentimes we're always portrayed as the bad guys. And so this particular episode was dealing with some young ladies who had veered off on the side of the road in a snowy wintry condition. They lost control of the vehicle, crashed into like a wooden post, got their car stuck on the wooden post. So the car is literally already damaged, tore up. We get there, the police call us. We get there to tow the vehicle, and they're like screaming at us, yelling at us, cussing at us. Hey, you better not mess up my car. You better not damage my car. And I'm like, okay, well, it's already damaged. You know what I mean? So, you know, but that's kind of like the norm. You know, a lot of times we're the bad guys, even though we're not bad guys. I mean, I didn't damage this lady's car. I didn't put her car on the post, but it still was my fault. You know, and it's one of those things where it's like, it's a frustration. So we get blamed regardless because, I mean, they got to blame somebody. You know what I mean? So they can't blame the police because they're going to go to jail. So unfortunately, hey, well, we next. So, I mean, that kind of is displayed in the show as well, that although we're just trying to do our job, you know, we're often still portrayed as the bad guy. We're often still portrayed as the person or the people that are at fault.
What do you think is the biggest misconception about tow truck drivers? Because in my head, sometimes I look at you guys as well as the boot guy and the, the repo guys as these bad guys. Do you think that's the biggest, you know, perception about you guys?
I do. I think oftentimes people forget that, you know, this is a job for us just like any other job. We have a more difficult job in a sense because, yeah, sometimes we're the ones that are taking your vehicle away from you. And that's how you get to work. That's how you travel. That's how you get from point A to point B. So I understand, you know, and so depending on what type of towing, you know, the individual is doing, yeah, you could be portrayed as the bad guy, you know, but you have to look at it in the other aspect of, you know, we're the good guy if you're on the side of the road and your car didn't overheat. Or we're the good guy if, like you just, we were talking about, you know, these crazy roads and you scared and you done broke down. Well, now we the good guy. You know what I mean? So those are the things that I think are forgotten. But yeah, absolutely. I would say that we're oftentimes more portrayed as the bad guy because normally when we're being called, it's because the car needs to be removed, whether it's from a parking spot that you're not supposed to be in or whether it's an accident that you've gotten in and your tow truck driver didn't show up in time, you know. But at the end of the day, we're still doing a job. We still have families to feed. We still have mouths to feed. And I think that's what a lot of individuals forget.
And what would you say was your most memorable tow experience thus far?
Most memorable. It's been many. I've got funny ones. I've got sad ones. What you want? I mean,
give me a funny one. I don't want a sad one. Give me a funny.
Okay. So I would say a funny one. We got called to the scene of an accident and the car was in a lake. And so when we got there, the car drove off into like this little private lake in a little subdivision. And so we went through all of the works, pulling the car out, fire department's out there, the police department's out there. And so literally as we pulled the car out, we see this guy walking up. So we looking like, you know, sir, what you doing? We working. He's like, that's my car. So literally you can smell on his breath, like he's reeking. You know what I mean? So he like, that's my car. So I'm looking at him like, you idiot. Like, you finna go to jail. Like, why would you come back? You know what I mean? So he walks up. He like, man, this is my car, man. You know, and so the police walk up, start searching your car. So he's like, yeah. He's like, okay, well, so why'd you leave the scene of accident? You know what I mean? So they start asking questions. They can instantly smell, you know, the alcohol on his breath. So he wound up getting locked up. And I was just shaking my head like, man, you had got away. Like, you could have made up any story in the book. You got away. You came back. But I don't know, man. That was one of the things where I was like, you know, just it was crazy. Because it was like, man, like, you know, here it is. You got away. You could have went home, slept it off, showed up the next day, say your car got stolen. I don't know what you would have said. But, you know, yeah, he wound up going to jail. So that was hilarious to me. Yeah.
Let's talk about the fact that your tow company is in what, the third largest city in the country, Chicago, and what that dynamic is like, because while watching the show, I noticed that some of the, you know, you guys carry armed, you know, you guys are armed and almost it comes with the territory.
Yeah. So yeah, some individuals, and of course right now, you know, concealed carry is more fonder and bigger in more states than others. And so it really depends on the company and the type of towing you're doing. I mean, I'm grateful enough that we tow for the police. So oftentimes when we go to our scenes, we already got police there. you know, with guns, you know. And so I am a concealed carry holder. I do carry, you know, I mean, all drivers don't carry. I really just think it depends on the company because it's a liability at the end of the day as well. But yeah, I mean, there are several dangers. I mean, in the particular instance where you're talking about the young ladies that are carrying in the show with the pink hookers, they, you know, they do what you call parking lot towing. So in an instance like that, that's similar to like repoing because you're basically pulling up. And if a person doesn't have a parking pass or a parking permit, you're towing it. And unfortunately, like I said earlier, these are people's livelihoods. This is how people get to work. In some instances, I mean, you know, people do Uber. So in some instances, this is how they make their money. You know what I mean? So here it is. I mean, you got individuals that are willing to do whatever and go to whatever cost to try to, you know, make sure you don't tow that vehicle. And so it definitely can get dangerous. It definitely can get crazy. I mean, I've had guns pulled on me before, you know, just angry customers, angry people that in the mind frame at that particular time, they don't care about you doing a job. They don't care that, hey, I'm here just to do my job. But individuals, you know, when tensions are high and they're screaming and yelling, you know, you ain't thinking about none of that. And that's how a lot of times stupid incidents happen. So
Early, what would you say is the most rewarding part about your job? Because one of the things that I found that was very interesting with your story is the philanthropic efforts that you have put there in Chicago. You've done a lot of work with women and children, but what has been the most rewarding thing for you in this position?
I would say it's definitely that. I love the fact that I've been able to take a company and turn this company into a huge community effort relief project. I mean, I literally, we come to the call of duty for whatever. I mean, and it's not necessarily just local. I mean, we went to Texas, we went to Flint, Michigan. I mean, you know, wherever something arises, we try to come to the call of duty. And so I always told myself, I mean, I grew up in a nonprofit area, I mean, west side of Chicago is what they call it. And so I didn't grow up with much. And so I always said that if I ever got to a point of being able to help out in any type of way. And I always throw this disclaimer. I mean, I'm not rich. I don't have all this money, whatever the case is, but I always say that I feel like it's every business owner's responsibility to give back to the community that allows them to be in business. And I stand on that, you know? So I don't just say it, I do it. You know what I mean? I feel like that's something that's important because oftentimes we see a lot of individuals come into these communities and they get rich off of us. But guess what? At the end of the day, what happens? You know what I mean? They go back to these rich homes and these suburbs and these areas. And at the end of the day, it's like, okay, you know, hey, what about the community? You know? And so I think that's what it's about. I think it's about making sure that you look out for who is looking out for you.
And I got to ask, did you have people to recognize you from the show since the show has aired that say, hey, I saw you on that
show? Yeah. I mean, so because I do so much stuff in the community, I'm kind of already somewhat known in Chicago. But, I mean, my drivers, oh, my God. Like, I already said I'm going to probably have to hire a whole new crew because, like, they've got, like, so Hollywood, man. Like, I mean, like, it's all the way down to, like, the Uber driver showed up one day and was like, man, I saw y'all show. Can I take a picture with y'all? You know, and so, I mean, so that's been challenging because although I'm ecstatic and happy that they get to kind of get some shine, you know, because of the show, it's kind of it's an oxymoron because it's like, you know, in one sense it's great, but in another sense it's like, okay, we got to still do some work, you know? And so they kind of sometimes forget about that. So.
Absolutely. Early Walker, thank you so much for being a guest today on Upfront. Again, we're talking about A&E's new series, Hustle and Tow, which airs every Tuesday evenings at 10 PM. You can get more information about that at WCLK.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Look for Early Walker on back-to-back episodes of Hustle and Tow this Tuesday, April 18th at 10 p.m. on A&E.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, presenting the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra Septet with Wynton Marsalis on Saturday, May 22nd at 7 p.m. This evening performance will include the Democracy Suite and is done in collaboration with the ASO's Talent Development Program to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion. Tickets must be reserved by Monday, May 17th. More information is available now at aso.org.
Something I can see. Hi, this is Iyanla Van Zandt, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
I know this is hard. I'm only here to help you. Let's get started.
I work for this rich family.
They brought me into their home to take care of their son, so...
Sounds like a lot to handle.
They respect what I do.
Your girlfriend's 15, and you are 18.
And she's innocent.
Now you want to talk about what? My dramatic emotional breakdown.
In prison, you assaulted a guard. What's it been like for you since you've gotten out? I am taking care of other people, but there's no one to take care of me.
You just heard the new trailer for HBO's award-winning drama, In Treatment. The original series is back in session with Emmy-winning actress Uzo Aduba as the empathetic therapist, Dr. Brooke Taylor, who is at the center of this season. The reimagination of the series is set in present-day Los Angeles and brings a diverse trio of patients in session with Dr. Brooke to help navigate a variety of modern concerns. Issues such as the global pandemic and recent major social and cultural shifts are a backdrop to the work that Dr. Brooke will undertake, all while she deals with the complications of her own life, including the loss of her father. I caught up with Uzo Aduba as part of a recent AFCA roundtable discussion where the real loss of her mother helped her prepare for the role.
You know, I think, listen, loss is hard for anybody who's dealing with it, but you find a way to navigate through. I think projects find you, and then some projects you find. This is a project that I, for the rest of my life, will never know why Josh and Jen came to find me, but here we are. Usually with my work, it feels like something going out that is given going this way. And I can say with certainty, this was something that I got a lot from as well. And this is a project, and that was from the writing and the stories, and equally from the performances and the open heart. I don't know how far along all of you are into the show, but these people, along with our incredible other cast members, have such a dynamic, fire, power, strength and vulnerability that I don't think they'll ever know, like, what an offering that, you know, art is an offering. And it was your work, Q, your work, Liza, your work, Josh, was an offering to me, but will be such an offering to so many other people. I don't even know if you know how incredibly important. They are a trademark of excellence, all of them. And the breadth of their work, the speeches and like just the heart openness, you know, it helps everyone, right? When people come into a space with that much vulnerability and that much heart, you know, it moves you, it changes you, it shifts you, it heals you. So certainly did heal me.
Watch In Treatment Season 4 when it debuts on HBO May 23rd.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Life Lux Jazz Experience, November 4th through the 8th, 2021, in Los Cabos, Mexico. Performers include Eric Roberson, Mesa, Mike Phillips, Hiroshima, and is hosted by Mark Curry. There will also be health and wellness activities and a sunset cruise. Information is available at lifeluxjazz.com.
What's happening? This is Aldis Hodge, star of Showtime's City on the Hill, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius on WCOK 91.9, Atlanta's Jazz Station.
My last segment features journalist, author, and film critic Rhonda Rasha Penn Rice. She's here as part of my entertainment roundup, and we'll chat about the 2022 Golden Globes being canceled on NBC. She'll also dish about the newest addition to her best-selling book, Black American History for Dummies, which debuts this week.
Rhonda Penn Rice, welcome back to Upfront. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Ray?
I'm good. I'm good. You know, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. We always talk about the latest that's happening in entertainment news and, you know, what's going on in Hollywood. And I think one of the biggest stories this week is the fact that NBC will not be carrying the Golden Globes in 2022. Apparently, the network is not satisfied with the lack of diversity and inclusion from the Hollywood Foreign Press, which is an organization that actually presents the Golden Globe Awards. And that really kind of kicks off the award season, if you will, at the beginning of the year. It kind of goes from Golden Globes and then to Emmys and then Oscars, correct?
Yes, yes. I mean, it's, well, it goes even when the Emmys don't come on until like September, but you know, there's the Golden Globes, and then you kind of look for the SAG Awards. And I mean, there are little ones in between, but it's pretty much Golden Globes, SAG, and now Indie, the Indie Spirit, and then the Oscars.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of talk about, you know, diversity in Hollywood. And we've talked about this several times before on the show. In particular, the question at hand is the lack of African-American journalists, people of color that are part of the Hollywood Foreign Press. So for our listeners and those that are tuning in, if you can explain, how does that process work? Because from what we've talked about offline, you actually have to live in Hollywood in order to be a part of the Hollywood Foreign Press.
Well, that's what I was told. Like, one of the criteria is that you are a Southern California journalist, Southern California-based journalist who regularly contributes to a foreign publication. And so, you know, for Black journalists, I mean, there are some in Southern California, but of course you'd have a much wider net if you include New York and DC, because these are like foreign journalist capitals of the world. I mean, LA is great, but it's not really, it's not as established as New York and DC. As far as that arena is concerned. So for me, when I heard that, I said, well, you know, they've already kind of restricted the pool as to who can come, you know, through. So one of the things that I hope is happening now is the expansion of that window.
And what this will do is allow more opinions, more diverse opinions and attitudes and ideas in regards to the nominations for the Golden Globes, the winners, if you will, and just really having more of a broader perspective so that all of the awards are not just determined by, you know, a certain group or a certain caliber of people. Do you think that other networks will follow suit with some of the other award shows that, again, this call for diversity and inclusion, do you think that we'll see more of this in the future?
No, I don't. I think that we are seeing this because it's publicized. Also, you know, with the Oscars, Sherbonne Isaac, she was very proactive in winding down her presidency of creating policies in which you would attract a more diverse body. So it's going to take time to really see that go into effect. But no, I don't think. I think that we're seeing this because there was an outrage.
In addition to the lack of diversity in their journalists, the organization is also being called to the carpet about some financial ethical issues. Apparently, there was some money exchanged for some press junkets, and I guess some things were not being used properly. Do you find that is a problem when it comes to, I mean, because when you think, I mean, we get gifts all the time, right? I mean, when people are, when studios are promoting, you know, films or promoting a new, networks are promoting a new television series, we get gifts all the time. Does that sway your opinion about the show or the film?
No, not for me. I mean, maybe with others, but also at the heart of that, people have to know that entertainment journalists aren't paid very well. So these are perks that go along with it. Now, if you're in an organization like a CNN or New York Times and you're on staff, and sometimes with even freelancers, you are not allowed to accept gifts. And there is a strict monetary restriction on how much something can be. And in some cases, like, it can't be more valuable than $25. But that, but there are problems there as well, because they're just people who wouldn't be able to even cover if studios didn't cover travel and so forth. So, I mean, you get to the heart of it at one point. Like, especially with magazines, a lot of rich people worked in these industries. So pay wasn't as essential because they were being subsidized by their family wealth. And now that you have a system, I mean, have an industry in which more people are being allowed, some of that structure has not gone away. So things have to be rebuilt. And I mean, I know, like, you look at the explosion of what, you know, bloggers and YouTubers have been able to do. And at a certain tier, I know, I'm quite confident they would say that I've been able to reach another level because I have been able to get on a junket, you know, pre-COVID, of course. And now, you know, the one thing that's happened through COVID, it's kind of helped to democratize a lot of things. But, you know, even then there are like restrictions. I mean, we're going back. At first, it was just like, oh, let's get as many people as possible. And now we're kind of going back to that like tier system and so forth. So, I mean, it's just a complicated problem. And it's not one thing. It's a combination of things.
Wow. Well, on a personal note, Rhonda, we want to say congratulations on the expansion of your book, Black American History for Dummies. You've actually added some more to this project, or this book, I should say, and that's going to be coming out next week, the new version, correct?
Yes, yes. So Black American History for Dummies is available. Well, pre-orders start to be fulfilled on May 18th. So it will continue to expand. And so this is an updated version of African American History for Dummies, which came out in 2007. And in doing this, yes, I had to expand it because lots of things have changed, particularly as it relates to what we're talking about now, entertainment. In the previous edition, my Black Hollywood film and TV chapter was one chapter. And so now it's become big enough so that film and TV can have their own chapters. And that has a lot to do with very positive development we're seeing, where we are seeing a plethora of Black projects and so forth. Well, I hope that notification didn't ruin your audio.
No, not a problem at all. Well, again, congratulations, Rhonda, on the extension of this book. And I had a chance to actually look at it, you guys, and the difference between 2007 and this year is really, really big. It's thicker this time around. So really, really excited about that. Rhonda, thank you so much for joining us this week on Upfront. And how can our listeners stay in contact with you on social media?
Well, Instagram and Twitter at Rhonda Racha, RhondaRacha. So that is Rhonda without an H. RhondaRacha. And so Instagram and Twitter, I am there.
All right. Continue to have a great May, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Uzo Aduba, Early Walker, and Rhonda Racha Penrice. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next week for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside the Entertainment Industry.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside the Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's jazz station, and is recorded from the campus of Clark Atlanta University.